And let's all begin this session with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those, especially those representing, is this about the sharing part? No. I'll read it anyway. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away with you and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names or reference to members of O-Readers Anonymous, and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being taped and will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use fictitious names. We ask that members that belong to other 12-step programs or affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs speak only of their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. Okay, so it says I get to speak for 15 to 20 minutes and then we'll proceed. Hi, my name is Cindy and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Cindy.
And I have been in this program for almost 27 years now. Thank you, God. And I have a 17-year abstinence, and I'm maintaining a 60-pound weight loss. And that means I have a normal body size. And so I'm going to share with you what it was like before I walked in the room so that you know I belong here and you can hear a little bit about what my history was. I grew up the second oldest of a family of nine, and in our family, food was love. Food was abundant. My dad was a compulsive eater. I can remember when they had no money, but boy, if my mother didn't go buy the groceries and she had to put them on credit, and she was so embarrassed and humiliated. But if he didn't have something on the table that he wanted for dinner, there would be a fuss. You know, it wasn't like we ate hot dogs and beans because that's what we could afford. It had to be a meal that he felt was appropriate for him. So you know, in fact, we had hot dogs and beans when Dad was out of town because we all thought that was a treat, you know. But food was important. So I grew up with brothers. That meant when the bowl went around the table, you made sure you took your fair share because if the bowl came back to you, it was going to be empty. So I made sure to make sure I took my fair share first. And the reason I mentioned having brothers, boys can eat a lot more than girls. Except I could eat every bit as much as they could. Didn't have a weight problem. Very skinny little kid, normal sized teenager. But my disease was there from the beginning. I have a couple of things I remember clearly from my childhood, where I stole money so I could have snacks. I remember this one story, and I'll just share it. There was two cans of applesauce in a bowl that had been forgotten to put on the table. And so when I came and I was supposed to be doing the dishes, I stood there and ate 2 volt cans of applesauce. And I remember the thought, I'm just going to have one more spoonful. I'm just going to have one more spoonful. And that in itself was significant because I knew I could not eat that stupid applesauce. But then my parents called me in and asked me why I had done that. I don't know. I don't know. Well, you might have a tummy ache or you're going to be sick, you know. And I said, I don't know. Because that was the truth. I had absolutely no clue. Through high school, I maintained my weight. I had lunch money, but I spent it on the candy bars you could buy after school rather than on lunch. As that was my favorite thing, was that sort of food. Got married at a very young age. Oh my gosh, I could buy what I wanted, put it in the cupboard, I could eat. My husband and I'd go out to eat, and we'd order 2 pizzas, and we'd each eat our own. That didn't seem odd to me. My husband was, 6'4", and he worked outside, so of course he could eat a pizza without any problem. Not so much me. Had a baby within the second year of our marriage. gained some weight, and a lot of the things that created my stepping over the line, you know, we can have problems with food, but we can step over the line at some point. Had to do with some of the issues that came up during that marriage. Not anything we need to talk about here other than I was married for 14 years. It was not great. I got divorced. That part was great. And then I remarried to the nicest man you'll ever meet. And I had a great job and I had great kids and my day sounded like this. I opened my eyes and I thought, what am I going to have for breakfast? And then I would run in the kitchen and I would eat that breakfast. And then I would get dressed and go to work and I would stop at the cafeteria and pick up some breakfast because they didn't know I ate at home. So I could have another breakfast. Then I'd go upstairs and I would work for 3 hours, and work for me consisted of walking around with my coffee cup, talking to as many people as had time to stop. Of course, I was interrupting all their work days and going back and forth to the break room to see what was in there. Then it was lunch, and I'd go down and I'd have a sensible lunch. I'd have a salad, or I'd have, you know, no French fries, no, you know, fried foods, but I'd have a sensible lunch. But at 2 o'clock, when the desserts went on sale, guess who was standing in line? And at 4 o'clock, I was shoving money in a machine so I could have a fix. And then I would go upstairs and I would work, and I would actually work for 2, 3, 5 hours, very focused, uninterrupted. Oh, if I needed a snack, then I'd just go out and steal out of my employees' candy jars. I didn't steal out of their desk drawers. I would steal out of any place I had to go to find a fix at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night when I was alone in that room. If I happened to go home, instead of working late, the first thought was, what the hell am I going to do to fill all these hours? And then I would walk in and I would start looking in every cupboard, what can I eat now while it takes me the time to cook dinner. And I would cook dinner and then I would sit down and I would fall asleep. My mother-in-law cooked a couple times a week. That was great. You went over, she was a great Southern cook. You went over, you filled your plate, nobody asked you how much you were taking, seconds, thirds, fourths, didn't matter. The dessert came out. If there were 6 people in the room, the pie was cut in 6 pieces. If there were 3 people in the room, the pie was cut in 3 pieces. Nobody said a word, and I just kept getting bigger and bigger. And my husband never complained about the fact that I was gaining weight. But inside, the self-loathing, the self-hatred, the inability to stop what I was doing because I was just so out of control. I had never expected to be a successful businesswoman. I had no training for it. The only reason it came to me was I would say, I can do that. I can do that. And they believed me, and I could do that. But I had nothing inside to help me know that that was okay. So I was a fraud. And I was a liar, and I was confused, and I had no place to turn, because as you move up, there's no boss to tell you, oh yeah, that's a good idea, but why don't you try this, this, and this? You're making up the rules a lot of times. And there were things I did that were so, we were talking earlier about boundaries, I would just decide this was a good idea. I wouldn't talk to anybody about it. I'd change something that impacted, you know, huge things within the company. Didn't occur to me that that wasn't a good idea. Had a magical thinking mind. Oh, this will make everybody's job easier. Well, it might have if you'd have had a meeting and discussed it and gotten permission, but that wasn't the way my mind worked. I knew what was best for everybody, and I was going to implement it. So not only was the food crazy, but the mental gyrations in the head were crazy. And so last time I weighed on a scale before I came into OA, I was in a public place, I was in a Sam's, and I took a scale off and I put it on the floor, and I got up on it and it said 203 pounds, and I thought, I'm not getting on a scale again, and I didn't. But I didn't come into recovery for a while. I ended up going to see a therapist. She did me the best favor of my life. She said, here's these things, read these things with the 12 steps. Of Overeaters Anonymous. She said, do you think you could go to a meeting like that? I said, absolutely not. There's a little three-letter word in that list of steps that I am absolutely not going to be interested in. So she worked with me for a year, and then she told me there wasn't anything wrong with me that wouldn't work itself out, and a goodbye, have a good life. And I was furious because I loved having someplace I could go and just, you know, spill my guts and tell her all the things that were wrong with the world. And if there wasn't anything wrong with the world, then we could talk about what was wrong with me. One of the other favors she did for me was at some point I started talking about my weight and my food, and she said, "We're not going to talk about that." She said, "Because the only time you bring it up is when you don't have another issue. You're not ready to do this." So when she released me, I went out and I showed her, by golly, I lost 50 pounds. I walked 3 miles a day. Woohoo! And then one day, the fat woman woke up. All the weight came back. All the misery came back. All the fear came back. And a friend of mine caught me sitting at my desk in my office, sorting colored candy by color and shape in little piles. And I would eat them in a very sequenced, you know, you had to eat this one first and this one next and this one next because, and then this one last because that's my favorite. And then I would reach into a drawer and there was a 10-pound bag and I would bring more out and I would repeat that. And normally I wouldn't do that in front of anybody, but she was somebody I knew and she was standing there, and after the third time I looked at her and I said, I can't stop doing this. And she said, "Look in the phone book, find out where there's a meeting, and I will take you to a meeting." And they said, "Keep coming back." When I went, they said, "Keep coming back." Somebody did me a favor. He said, "For your first week, if you want to practice something different, don't do the one thing you hate yourself for the most. See if you can get through the week without doing that." For me, it was the eating out of my employees' candy jars, because I kept having to buy more candy to fill them up, and I kept being so embarrassed because I couldn't stop doing it. And for 1 week, I didn't eat out of anybody else's candy jar, and that was a success. And I went back, and I knew there was something there. And I have to tell you, I did OA my way. I didn't understand anything about spiritual program. I didn't understand anything about living a principled life. But I understood that I was welcome, that I could come in, that I could share who I was, that I could take over and control if I wanted to, which is a sad thing, but I really couldn't because there were still structures around it and the other people knew what I was up to. But I could think that, you know, and gradually I began to understand. And after about 4 months, I got abstinent. I was abstinent about 7.5, 8 years. Something changed in my life I was angry about. Gained some weight, lied about it. I don't know why anybody didn't say, "You're just freaking in relapse," but I gained, I don't know, 30 pounds. And then one day I bought a bag of chocolate to share with my employees, and the only person that ate that bag of chocolate was me, and I couldn't lie anymore because I'd been basically sugar-free for all those years, you know? I mean, I'd just done a really good job, and then I couldn't. I couldn't stop. And then I came back and then I really learned about working the steps. I worked the steps before, but I didn't get the steps. The second time through, I really got that information and got abstinent again fairly quickly. And that started my 17 years. And, you know, the rest is just coming back. Keep coming. Keep. Don't give up on anything. I am here to tell you that if you've come for the magic cure, I am not going to tell you one new thing today. But you are going to do some work that's hopefully going to help you make some decisions on what you're going to do to get and maintain your abstinence. And with that, I thank you for listening, and I'm going to pass.
Thanks, Cindy. Thanks.